Welcome back to another episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. Today's episode is a highly requested topic. We are answering all of your questions about nutrition and healthy living on a budget. And to do that, we are bringing in a registered dietitian and one of my very best friends, Gabrielle Palmieri. Gabrielle has been a practicing dietitian for a few years now after getting her master's degree and has built a social media following as well, teaching people about nutrition and debunking health myths that we see on the internet. In this episode, we'll be covering nutrition basics, how to prioritize your health while sticking to a budget, and more. But before we get into the episode, let's do our little weekly recap. Grace, hello. What is going on in your week?
Before we get into the episode, we want to take a minute to tell you about today's show sponsor, Neos Investments. If one of your 2024 goals is to start earning passive income, like money that you can transfer to your checking account every month to spend on literally whatever you want, learning more about Neos Investments and their suite of ETFs may be a great step in the right direction. ETF stands for Exchange Traded Fund, which is a basket of investments like stocks and bonds that typically aim to track a specific index but trades like a stock on an exchange. This means that an ETF can offer diversification with the flexibility to buy or sell shares whenever the stock market is open. Neos ETFs aim to offer investors monthly income, which can either be paid out to your brokerage account or reinvested. Their experienced team utilizes data-driven option strategies like covered calls to pursue this monthly income while keeping tax efficiency in mind. In simple terms, a covered call option contract allows you to make a deal with another investor. You're granting another investor the right to purchase your shares at a specific price on or before a specific date in the future. In exchange for that promise, you're compensated cash, also known as premium. Neos does all the buying and selling on behalf of their shareholders and aims to pass the option premiums on to them. These largely comprise the monthly distribution shareholders receive. A covered call option strategy can offer a way for you as an investor to seek income in your portfolio. The experienced team at Neos Investments implements these types of option strategies with the goal of distributing monthly income to investors in their ETFs. Their flagship ETF, SPYI, aims to offer exposure to the S&P 500 index while paying shareholders a high monthly income distribution that's also tax efficient so that you can aim to keep more of it when tax time comes around. As with all investments, investors should carefully consider their investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Neos exchange-traded funds before investing. To obtain a prospectus or summary prospectus containing this and other important information, please visit neosfunds.com. Please read the prospectus carefully before you invest. An investment in Neos ETFs involves risk, including possible loss of principal. The equity securities purchased by the funds may involve large price swings and potential for loss. Neos ETFs are distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Hello. It has been a big week. If you listen consistently to the podcast, you know that moving has been a bit of a struggle and finding an apartment has been a bit of a journey for me. But I officially found one, signed the lease, and moved in last Friday. It was quite a little situation. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that like I went to move in, or I planned to move in, and then they were like, hey, we're not going to be able to get internet installed in your apartment for like a week, and I work from home, so that wasn't going to work. I had to like push my move back a week and reschedule my movers and all of that, but honestly, moving on a Friday actually ended up being so nice because I was able to take the whole day Friday to move and Saturday and Sunday and just really like settle in. So, I mean, things are still everywhere. My belongings are still all over the place, but I'm really excited and I'm already seeing just like an improvement in myself. I feel like so much more inspired when it comes to like creating content again, which I just was not feeling inspired at all with content for the past couple months. I have been like super consistent with my routines. Like I think some people will probably relate to this. And when you're living in an environment where, you know, it's not like there's anything inherently toxic. Like I was living at my parents' house. My parents are both lovely, lovely people. They were not helicopter parents. They weren't like, you have to tell me everything you're doing and where you're going and all, you know, it wasn't like that. I had, you know, my own life there. But sometimes I feel like you just feel like an environment is kind of stifling you and you feel like leaving that environment is going to be the key to changing things around. And it was just so hard to feel motivated living at home because it was an environment that I felt stifled in. I wasn't following through with like my skincare routine and like I was just making whatever was convenient for dinner and I wasn't really caring and putting a lot of effort into my own health and well-being. And I was just noticing myself just on a downward trend. And like already being here, I mean, I've been doing my skincare routine consistently. I've been like styling my hair in the morning and eating like and making these really like nutritious meals and having a lot of fun cooking and it's just been good to kind of see me like get my spark back a little bit. One of my friends actually messaged me the other day and was like, I just feel like on your social media, like you just look like you kind of like got your spark back a little bit. Like you seem like you're coming back into yourself and you look happier. And I was like, ugh. I'm like, it's because I am. But I don't know. It's been exciting, but it's like also causing me to think about a lot. Like it's just, I don't know. It's making me, I don't know. Yeah. Just think about a lot more about my life.
No, I love that so much. I think what you're referencing is you not having all of the control around mm-hmm. your day-to-day, your habits, your routines, something mm-hmm. as little as cooking dinner. There might be someone else in the kitchen. And whether that be your parents or your roommates or just having roommates in general, when there's any aspect of your life that you don't totally have control over, it's really easy to not feel like yourself. And it is so mm-hmm. crazy how that immediately switches once you have your own space. I remember feeling the exact same way when I moved into this apartment back in March after living with two boys for 2 years, having two boy roommates. And then all of a sudden I was like, I am glowing.
Right.
There's just something about it. Like you do get your spark back. I love that for you.
Yeah. It's just making me think a lot more about life. I mean, I've only been here for like, it's a Wednesday when we're filming this. I moved in on a Friday. So it's not like I've been here for forever, but it is making me think more about my life more broadly, which some people will tell me to like slow down in thinking, but being here, I like the apartment complex. I like the location, but it's still like freezing cold and I hate the cold. And it has just made me think about what I want to do when my lease is up. And I know I'm only like 5 days into my lease, so I need to mm-hmm. take a deep breath. But I don't know. I know that I eventually want to move somewhere warm, and being here, you know, it's so cold that I'm like, I want to sit on my new balcony. But like, it's freaking freezing. And I like went to bring my trash out the other day, and we don't have like valet trash. I have to bring it outside to the dumpster. And like I had, oh my God, I wish I had like the security camera footage. It was so funny. I had my trash bag and then I had a bunch of cardboard boxes, and the boxes were so big and I'm short. So I was having a really hard time lifting the lid to the dumpster high enough to be able to swing the box in. And I literally dropped the box probably like 10 times before I finally got it in. And I was doing this in the freezing cold and it was windy, and I just like had enough of the cold. And it just like really made me think about, you know, like I like where I'm at. I, you know, this is it's the move for the next year, but what do I want to do when my lease is up? And I just don't know. And I know that I don't need to know right now, but I'm also trying to be smart about like, if I'm going to move again in a year, I need to think about saving for that move. And, you know, like thinking about what I'm buying here, because if it's not going to be worth it to take it with me or whatever, I need to think that through. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a big choice. It really is. It's a big choice.
I'm like laughing because it's so crazy how our weekly recaps always line up. And again, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know, like Grace and I do not prep for these, as in we don't tell each other what we're going to talk about. And obviously I know that Grace just moved, so like I know this about her. But I literally wrote down the exact same thing for my weekly recap, because mine was that I spent the weekend in Florida with one of my best friends. She just moved down there. And I talked about this in our cost of moving episode, I believe, but almost all of my friends have moved or are moving away from Pittsburgh this year. And she was one of them. She moved down to Daytona Beach and we had the best weekend ever. I can talk about it in my weekly recap, but she moved away from Pittsburgh because she was just like, okay, it's like time. I wanted to move somewhere warm. And going down there like has kind of confirmed that for me as well. Like, okay, what am I going to do when my lease is up mm-hmm. in March of next year? Like I'll be 26 at that point. And if I don't make a move at that point, I feel like I kind of never will. And I've always wanted to go somewhere warm. The cold really bothers me. Coming back here after being in the 80 degree weather and the sunshine for 3 days, back to the 40 degree like gray weather, yeah, just makes me really sad. So I'm like, okay, just starting to think about that as well. I'm trying to balance like thinking through what I really want out of life and not selling myself short from that, but then also enjoying the present and not wishing my life away, because this chapter of my life is also really amazing. And this year is still going to be really fun, regardless of the fact that I'm not in the location that I exactly want to be in, like not wishing that away.
Yeah, I completely get that, because I've struggled a lot with the idea of like, well, I'm 25, so like I should know exactly where I want to live and I should move and like start my life there, because, and then I start to go into this spiral where I'm like, well, then if I don't move until I'm 29, then I'm having to restart my life over when I'm 29, and then it just goes and goes and goes. And I think about it. But I was actually listening to a podcast the other day where it was, gosh, I don't remember the name of the guy. I think his name's Jason. I don't remember his last name. I'm blanking. He was on like The Bachelor or Bachelorette, and he was interviewing.
Oh, Jason Tardik?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. He was interviewing Susie Evans and Justin Glaze. And they were just kind of talking about the fact that both of them lived on the East Coast and then moved to the West Coast pretty recently. And Susie said something about how when she was like 27, she was struggling a bit financially and she was working a couple serving jobs and she just like wasn't where she wanted to be. And then I think when she moved out to LA, she was 29. And something when I just heard her talking about it, because I'm like, she is such a cool woman. Like, she is just like, she's hilarious, she's beautiful, she's like so sweet. And I'm like, she did it at 29. Like, I'm okay. You know what I mean? Like, I'm good. Like,
yes.
Because I would never look at it and be like, oh, you moved so late in life. But yet I put that pressure on myself. So
yeah,
I don't know. We'll have to figure out where we want to go.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. The friend that I just went to visit, she's 29. And when she told me that she was moving in the fall, I was like, that's amazing for you. Like, this is totally the phase of your life to do that. And if I'm telling her that at 29, mm-hmm. like, why do I not believe that for myself? Like, I feel like I'm behind or whatever, because I'm still in Pittsburgh. But she literally said to me this weekend, she's like, Erin, like, calm down. Like, you know, you're 25.
Yeah.
Right?
And I have a few friends that are in their, like, late 20s, and all of them say the same thing. They're like, the last 5 years of your 20s, so much changes. Like, literally 1 year you could be like single living at your parents' house, and 2 years later you're married and pregnant with a house, and like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh my god, things don't say that. No.
It's just like, things can go so quickly though. So it's like, if you really want to like change your life and move and do something different, you really can do it at any age. And I don't know. Maybe people listening will kind of relate to like the pressure we put on ourselves, but I don't know.
Yeah. So long story short, Grace and I are going to be doing some traveling this year, figuring out where it is we want to move. We were just talking in art. We do like a monthly podcast strategy meeting. And we were talking last week about like what we want to do this quarter for the podcast. And we said we want to take a trip down to Austin, Texas to like redo our headshots and like film some podcast episodes in person. And like, that could be a cool city to go like check out, because has been my biggest roadblock, is I haven't had a city that I was like, oh my gosh, I definitely want to move here. I haven't been sold on a location. So I feel like I need to do some research this year.
Yeah, I feel that. With the whole like idea thing of not knowing where to move as well, the other thing I've been thinking so much about is getting a dog now that I have my own space. And it's huge. When I toured the apartment, like I physically came here and looked at it, but for some reason moving my belongings into it, I'm like, this is way bigger than I thought. Like, I don't use like 3/4 of the cabinet space. My bed is a full-size bed because that was the biggest bed I could fit in my bedroom at home. It looks like a child-sized bed. Yeah. It looks like a twin bed in this space. Like, it's so big. I don't even know what to do with it. And I'm like, I've wanted a dog my whole life, and I'm trying to just like, I think I've mentioned that I'm doing this little like 1 year experiment and stuff. And the goal is to make as many decisions as possible based on what your higher self for the best version of you would do. And I was like, you know, overthinking the whole thing. And then I was like, no. I'm like, what would higher self Grace do? What would big sister Grace do? She'd be like, girl, you're fully capable of having a dog. Like, it's not like, cause I think one of my things was thinking about the travel aspect of like, I would have to board the dog every single time I travel. And that's obviously expensive. But at the same time, it's like, I'm going to have the dog for like 15 years of my life. Like, and I'm probably not going to do this much travel like the rest of my life. So I'm like, the dog will be fine. Like,
the dog will be fine.
Like, 100%. It's going to be okay when you board it, girl.
Yeah. You overthink things way more than I do. Oh, I'm a lot more impulsive and I'm just kind of like fly by the seat of my pants in a lot of things, for better or for worse. But
I don't have an ounce. Like, I do not have an ounce of like fly by the seat of my pants in me. Like, I literally just yesterday morning, I finished a book called Don't Overthink It, because my therapist was like, you need to read this. And I was like, you're right, ma'am. Yes, I do.
She's like, go take a course.
Yep. She was like, go read this and come back to me. I was like, okay. You know, and we were actually talking about it yesterday in my session. And I said to her, I really want a dog. And then I'm like, I start seeing all these videos on social media talking about how the salt that they put on sidewalks when they plow it and stuff can like ruin your dog's paws and like hurt them. So then I was like, oh my God. I'm like, well, I'll get my dog little booties, of course, you know? But then I started going into this overthinking spiral of like, well, if I go to the rescue to look at like a few dogs, I don't necessarily know which one I'm coming home with that day. So then how do I get booties for the dog if I don't know the dog I'm taking home? And my therapist was like, Grace, Amazon exists, sweetheart. She was like, you could have booties to you literally the next day. And if you have to not take the dog on a walk the first day you take it home because you don't have booties and there's salt everywhere, great. Or you could put the dog in the car, drive it to a cute little residential neighborhood where there isn't a bunch of salt on all the sidewalks and walk the dog. Like, she's like, it's going to be fine, Grace. Why are we losing sleep over like
he's like, or like PetSmart definitely has them because I like bought Bella them in person, so you could get them like, the day of.
Right. I'm like, Grace, like it's not like you live in like a remote village that like doesn't have access to a Walmart. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just I really have to slow down my brain with the overthinking. But I did get an ESA letter though from my therapist, and I just gave it to my landlord today. So mm-hmm. That means I can submit an application to the rescue to get this. There's the cutest stinking – they're in like a litter. There's two of them that I've been like selfishly hoping don't get adopted because I really want to look at them.
Yeah.
And if I apply, I would literally be getting a dog like so soon. And I'm
You need to do it.
Excited but so scared, but I'm also trying to just pull the trigger. It feels like a child. You know like how people when they have kids, they're like so afraid they're going to mess the child up. They're like, oh my God, I don't want to like F it up. That's how I feel about
No, one thing that I've learned from having Bella is like you literally can figure out anything in life. I feel like doing mm-hmm. something like this and just committing to it and doing it teaches you that like anything that you want to do, you can literally just do and figure it out because I felt the exact same way. I said to my ex-boyfriend, I was like, you can't leave. Like the first day that we had Bella, I work from home and he doesn't. And I was like, you can't leave. Like, what am I going to do? Like watch this dog by myself. And he was like, Erin, you're literally fine.
Like, you're a grown adult.
Like you can watch the dog and like you literally just figure it out. It's like actually not that hard. But even like with the boarding and everything, you figure everything out and life goes on and like you adapt. It was the same thing with choosing an apartment. Like you just have to choose one and then like figure everything out along the way.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that's kind of the theme for just like this chapter of my life is like just Grace, push. You just have to push yourself to do it, sweetheart, and then figure it out. And like, guess what? Like, I was talking to my therapist and I said to her, I was like, I made a list when I was journaling one night of times I like took a leap or a risk or whatever and it worked out. And it was like every instance I had taken a leap had actually worked out. Like whether that was like leaving a relationship, quitting a job, firing a client, whatever it was, every single leap worked out. So I was like, where in my brain am I finding evidence that like it's not going to work out? Like I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. I feel like I got to just pull the trigger and do the dang thing, you know?
Yeah. I'm excited for you to get a dog. Our dogs can be friends.
Thanks. They'll be besties.
I love that.
Okay. Well, I think that wraps up our little weekly recap. We are going to now kind of dive into our section with Gabrielle.
Welcome, Gabrielle, to the Girls Talk Money podcast. We're super excited to have you on for today's episode. We already gave a little bit of an introduction into who you are and what this episode is going to be about, but can you introduce yourself and tell everyone who you are and what you do?
Yes. Thank you for having me. I'm Gabrielle. I'm a registered dietitian, as I'm sure you know. I went to the University of Dayton, which is in Ohio. I had to do an undergrad program where I majored in dietetics and nutrition, and then I got my master's in dietetics and nutrition as well. It's required for dietitians. And then I started working clinically, which a lot of dietitians do. It's kind of something a lot of people don't know dietitians do, but we're working in the hospital. We're doing things like tube feeds, IV feedings for anyone that can't eat by mouth. I currently work with like a lot of food allergies, food intolerances, things like inflammatory bowel disease and IBS kind of patients, celiac disease patients. But I also have my own private practice and I post a lot of nutrition content, mostly just to educate, but also the whole reason I'm a dietitian is because I had an eating disorder or disordered eating for a long time. So it's really important for me to try to educate people in a practical way and give them tips so they can still have a healthy relationship with food, but also eat healthy and not, you know, have to eliminate like a whole food group. So yeah, I also focus on hormone health and everything.
I love that. Obviously, we want to get into like what dietitians do, the differences between dietitians and nutritionists and all of that stuff. But I think a good place to start for this episode, because obviously this is the Girls Talk Money podcast. Let's start with our nutrition on a budget section. So we get a lot of questions about this, and I think people tend to overcomplicate this a little bit. But what would you say to someone that maybe wants to start eating healthier or just being healthier in general, but they're overwhelmed and they might feel like money in particular is the barrier?
Honestly, I think eating healthy doesn't need to be super expensive. I think a lot of people just aren't clear on what to buy or how to buy it or where to go. I'm not a person that can meal plan, but I think it's really good for some people. Planning out your meals a week at a time can be really good, as well as like online grocery shopping, so you can at least see how much you're spending. One of the big things too that goes along with just eating healthy on a budget is we literally waste so much food in America. Like, I was looking into this and it said like the average family of four loses like $1,500 a year on food waste. And I feel like so many people are just going to the grocery store multiple days a week and don't plan on cooking. They end up eating out instead, and then they just throw everything out. And there's a lot of things that you can like freeze or, you know, cook, but I think one of the main things that our age group struggles with is like, one, not knowing how to grocery shop, going to the grocery store hungry, also just eating out all the time or like door dashing. I feel like people are always eating out, which is just not helping anyone.
The food waste is such a good point. I was in the grocery store yesterday and I have a grocery store right next door to me, right? But why is my brain conditioned to think that I have to go to the grocery store only once a week, because you're told that like that's how you save money, is to only go once a week? But when I do only go once a week, I think that I overbuy because I feel constricted to only go once a week. And I'm like, well, if I don't buy it right now, then I'm not going to have it. So I buy like everything because I think that I'm going to run out of something. So do you have any like tips and best practices for like, if you're going to the grocery store? I know you said meal planning or even the online grocery pickup and things like that can be really helpful. But do you have any like tips for maybe things to buy if you think that you might not eat it? Like you mentioned the frozen vegetables and things like that. What are your best tips for grocery shopping?
Yeah, I would say a lot of staples that are really cheap and also you can just keep them in your pantry. Eggs are really cheap and you can buy eggs, but for pantry staples, it'd be like beans, grains. So just going to the bulk section and getting like oats. Oats are super cheap. Beans are really cheap. You can get dried beans if you want, but even canned beans are decently priced and they're just adding extra protein to your meals. I think one of the big things too is trying to stay on the perimeter of the grocery store. So the perimeter of the grocery store is going to be like the whole food products. Buying seasonal produce is going to be cheaper. So literally you can just Google it any season. They'll have a list of fruits and vegetables that are in season. You'll see it at the store. As long as you plan ahead to know what fruits and vegetables you should get, trying to stay in season is really good. I think the packaged foods, like the convenience foods, they're higher priced for a reason. I mean, you are getting the convenience, but all of like the protein bars, like buying just a whole chicken is going to be a lot cheaper for you than buying a bunch of protein bars. So staying and getting like fruits and vegetables, a protein, and thinking about like whole grains you can buy and trying to minimize the snacking processed packaged foods is going to be so much cheaper for you. A lot of times too, it's going to take like a lot of like work up front. But once you are able to make sure you can like learn how to cook, look up some recipes, look at the recipe before you go to the store, once you have all the food created, it's going to be definitely cheaper.
So you mentioned the produce kind of and like focusing on the perimeter of the store. So one of the questions we were asked was from a listener was, is there really any difference in the nutritional value between things that are you know, maybe name brand versus store brand, or when it comes to produce from organic and non-organic, like what's the difference there? Because there is certainly a price difference.
Yeah. I would say, so a really helpful, there's an app for like the Dirty Dozen. I don't know if you guys like that, know what the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 are. So the Dirty Dozen are fruits and vegetables that use the most pesticides. It's done every year. There's a whole list for 2023. So those are the foods that you, if you can afford it, I don't always buy it organic, but if you are looking to eat, you know, be more careful with that, then you can get those foods organically. I'll show you the list right now, but then the Clean 15 are going to be the foods that they researched and found this year, this past year, had the least amount of pesticides. So there's an app. It's from the Environmental Workings Group. And so the Dirty Dozen in 2023 were strawberries, spinach, kale, collard greens, peaches, pears, nectarines, apples, grapes, bell and hot peppers, cherries, blueberries, and green beans. So those foods, if you want to take that into account, you can definitely buy them organically, but you absolutely don't need to. You can just really wash them and make sure you're washing your fruits and vegetables. And one of the things I was going to say is buying the store brand is always cheaper from what I've seen. Like every time I go to Giant Eagle, I get the Giant Eagle brand. Aldi's a little different, but for the most part, getting the store brand. Like if I go to Whole Foods, I'm definitely going to try to get the Whole Foods because it's already so expensive.
So wait, you mentioned organic and the Dirty Dozen, but you can just wash them. Is that the only thing that organic does? I'm like not educated on this subject at all, because what about like organic eggs?
So for produce, if they're saying like the Dirty Dozen, that just means that they used more pesticides. So essentially washing it is going to help. I mean, I think, I don't know how much you can wash off and how much they're using. I think it really just depends, but that's literally all it is. It's just being like less pesticides. Mm-hmm. For eggs, so there's a bunch of different types of eggs. There's cage-free, free-range, pasture-raised eggs, organic eggs. Side note, like brown versus white eggs doesn't change the nutrition of the egg. It does. What matters is like how they are raised and what they're eating. So like omega-3 eggs, those eggs, they're eating more omega-3s. And that's why sometimes like the yolk is a little more orangey, because they're eating more omega-3 fatty acids. Cage-free, they aren't in cages specifically, but they could still be packed in together. They don't get any like outside, but they're in an inside area. And then free range is they have outdoor access and indoor access. And then the best ones would be like pasture raised. So they have outside access and they have more space.
That's crazy that just like the environment that the chickens are raised in impacts the nutritional value of it so much. But it makes sense because you think about just like what they're eating and like how healthy they are, and eggs are ultimately something that they are producing. So when it comes to, you know, so maybe like eggs, kind of like splurging on those and going for ones that might have a bit more nutritional value makes sense. What do you think is worth a splurge when it comes to like what you're buying at the grocery store? Like what's worth it? You know, is it worth it to splurge on the organic, you know, produce, and what's makes more sense to just save on?
I feel like it really just depends on what you personally are budgeting on. Like, I'm not an expert in this, obviously. That's for you guys, but you guys know what you budget on, so you prioritize certain things. I personally, my whole like career is built on healthy eating and nutrition, and I love food. So I don't really budget on my food. I try to buy the healthiest options. I think it really just depends what people want to do. So if you want to eat healthier, you might need to budget more on shopping and maybe not doing like a $20 workout class once a week. Like little things like that, I feel like add up, and you need to just think about if you want to spend more money on food, it is going to be an investment and it takes time. But I think once you start getting used to it and understanding what your staples are at the store, it can be a lot easier. I don't think it needs to be healthy. I think a lot of people are feeling victim to some of the, like, the labels that are showing things to be healthier, but they're really just upping the price and they're not necessarily healthier. I think getting proper nutrition education on how to build a plate, you know, like getting a carb, fat, and protein at all your meals and not falling victim of just, oh, this is gluten-free, this says sugar-free, this like looks organic, so it's probably healthy, I'm going to buy it, when you could turn around like a bag of, let's think, like you could just turn around a box of Triscuits and they have like two ingredients. So learning how to label read and how to ingredient read is definitely key in that. So you're not just buying the super expensive items because they appear to be healthy, because there's so many things that people think are healthy, and I'm not here to bash them by any means, like, but they're not very, quote, healthy. They actually might be filled with a ton of sugar.
That's such a good point, because I feel like when people are saying they're overwhelmed because everything's so expensive, it really is the processed foods that are so expensive. And if you are trying to still buy the processed foods, but also add on like taking your health into account, and you're looking at the labels that are saying like sugar-free, or you're it's saying like high in protein, like all of those are double the price because they're targeting someone who is trying to be more health conscious. But like, for example, you use the example with protein bars. It is going to be so much more affordable for you to meal prep, let's say, overnight oats as your snack, as opposed to buying a Go Macro bar that's $3 a bar. And literally, if you like look at the like macronutrients to it, it's probably relatively the same and a lot more quote unquote healthy, because there's less ingredients in it if you make it at home. So just kind of focusing on, like you said, limiting the processed foods and building your plate, and then inherently that will save you more money.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing too is like with the food waste. So like, I feel like people are scared about buying fruits and vegetables, and it makes me so nervous thinking about how many people just have like rotting vegetables in their fridge that they just didn't freeze. Like, I just can't. That's my biggest fear sometimes when I open my own fridge and something like went bad. It doesn't need to be like that. Like, just put anything in the freezer. And even like, I really like, every time I cut up any vegetable, I will take all the scraps from the vegetable and I put it in a freezer Ziploc baggie and I put it in the fridge. And you can use literally any scrap from a vegetable to make veggie broth. Or I always do this mostly if I buy like a rotisserie chicken, because, you know, that is a convenience food, but sometimes I just want a rotisserie chicken, and I will save the bones, and then I use the bones, and basically you just get a big pot and you put like the carcass in there. You can do this with any animal bone, and you just make bone broth, chicken broth, and you can put all of the veggie scraps in there. So it just adds more flavor and more nutrients that are coming from the fruits and vegetables. And then you just drain it and then you throw out like the rest. So you can save so much of the vegetables that people are throwing away. It can even be like the outsides of a potato. It doesn't need to be, it might look kind of gross, but you're not going to eat it. You're just going to get the nutrients from it and then you're going to throw it away.
Wait, I love that. So you like make your own broth with all of like the leftover foods and stuff. Freezing the fruits and vegetables, I have never done this. I know like I buy frozen broccoli from the grocery store, but I didn't really put two and two together. I could take the non-frozen broccoli and put it in the freezer and turn it into frozen broccoli.
Yeah, and like buying the frozen option is usually cheaper, and it's actually a lot of people, which I didn't realize people thought this, but you know, TikTok and Instagram always surprise me, but people didn't realize like frozen is actually just, well, it's honestly could be argued to be even healthier, because they pick it at like the peak of freshness. So when it's the perfect ripeness, and that's when they freeze it, and it's really cheap. So if you know you're gonna like broccoli, for example, if you, every time you buy a head of broccoli, you end up throwing it away or freezing it, just buy the frozen broccoli. But most, if you do buy fresh and you see it to start getting bad, then definitely want to freeze it. I would say like carrots and peppers last a pretty long time in the fridge though, but you're like kale and veggies like that get really bad. Every time I buy salad, I always get kale, because I talk about kale all the time on the page. I really like it, but I also feel like if you get the crunchy kale, it doesn't get as wilted very fast. So if you're buying fresh kale from the produce section, it lasts a lot longer than if you buy like bagged kale or bagged spinach, because sometimes I come home and if I buy a bag or a plastic tub of spinach, I can already see the leaves like gross, and that makes me so angry. So I just get kale and it's usually perfect. And you just want it to be kind of tough texture when you buy it. If it's really soft, don't buy it because it's not going to last. But if it's tough, that's why you want to get it. And then I have a whole method to my madness on kale, because I feel like it's so tough and people don't want to eat it, but you just have to put like olive oil on it, lemon, a little bit of salt, and like Parmesan. And then you can add, like, I add like hemp seeds to mine or pumpkin seeds, and you have to massage it. It's weird, but like you just have to massage it and tenderize it, and then it gets soft and it'll taste like better than a salad at Roots, or I don't know if people know what that is, like Sweetgreen or some salad place. Yeah. I feel like salads I make at home are always 10 times better than when I go out.
You put me on to kale and now I eat so much of it. But since we're talking about vegetables here, because you mentioned that we don't typically get proper nutrition education, as in how to build a plate between your proteins, carbs, and fats and all of that. And since we're talking about vegetables specifically, can we talk about fiber here? Because this is one question that we got as well. We want to talk about like supplements and all of the things. But right now, and I know you talk a lot about gut health on your page. And right now there's all of like the gut health, probiotics, prebiotics, the poppy drinks, like all of the things, but we're talking about vegetables here. So can you give like a high level overview of what fiber is and maybe like why it's important, how we can get enough of it, things like that?
Yeah. So half of us don't get enough fiber. It's pretty bad. We need, like, women need at least like 25 grams and men need 38. Obviously there's different circumstances. There's some people that might have a GI condition and they really can't tolerate a lot of fiber. But it's in fruit and vegetables. Essentially, okay, if you're looking at a nutrition facts label, you see carbohydrates, that section, and then underneath the carbohydrates, you see fiber and you see sugar. So fiber is a type of carbohydrate. And that's another thing with the whole bashing carbohydrates thing. It doesn't really make much sense to me, because carbohydrates aren't bad for you. It's like the sugar aspect that could be bad for some people, but it's mostly the added sugar that we don't want. And the nutrition label will say if it's sugar or if it's added sugar now. So for instance, like if you're looking at a carton of milk, it's going to say 12 grams of sugar, but that's because it's like 12 grams of carbohydrates. Okay. That was a side note. But for fiber, there's insoluble and soluble fiber. No one really needs to know these differences between them. I would say getting a variety of all fruits and vegetables, all different types of colors, is all going to give you different polyphenols and antioxidants that are going to have benefits for you. So, you know, the color of the rainbow. I've made a lot of videos about the fact that like soluble fiber, it absorbs water. So it creates bulk in our stool. So thinking of things like oats, that's an example of a soluble fiber. And then there's insoluble fiber that doesn't dissolve in water. An example of that would be something like if you put celery in water, you're not going to see it absorb. So if you have diarrhea, the soluble fiber is going to help minimize that. But if you are having like constipation and diarrhea and you have insoluble fiber does add more water. So it can cause diarrhea if you eat too much insoluble fiber. So soluble fiber would be the one that you would want to minimize like any diarrhea. It'll just help bulk everything up. But I feel like that confuses people sometimes, and it's not meant to be confusing. I think people need to just focus on I try to get like two colors of vegetables in at every meal. That's kind of how I think of it. Just so you can get different nutrients from each vegetable or fruit. And then I try to stick to whole grains. So the brown rice versus white rice. I like white rice more, so I'm going to eat more white rice. But for other products, like I try to get quinoa in or farro, that's another type of whole grain, so I get more fiber. So the brown part of the brown rice is the fiber part, and then they take off the outside, and that's how you get white rice. So the outside part of a brown rice kernel is the fiber. But yeah, there's a lot, there's a huge rise of like colon cancer, and people are also having issues losing weight. And I feel like if you aren't eating enough fiber, you're not getting enough good gut bacteria to feed your gut. And a lot of people are having issues with like losing weight or feeling full and satiated. And a lot of times it's because we're eating a lot of like the simple sugars without fiber in them. So we eat something and we're immediately hungry later on because we don't have the substance of something that's fiber rich that is going to slow down our need to eat something else later on.
That's so interesting, especially what you said about like the diversity in what you're eating and making sure you're getting a bunch of different colors when you're eating and things like that. Do you have any tips on how someone might be able to incorporate more diversity of like fruits and vegetables in while still considering their budget? So instead of going to the store and buying like an entire thing of broccoli and like all of these different like fruits and bags of apples and all of the things, like do you have any good tips for how to incorporate more different fruits and vegetables into your diet?
Yeah, I would say if we're thinking of, I think the best way to pack in a bunch of nutrients is a smoothie. I think it's the easiest way to do it. And you don't really have to have much skill in the kitchen to be able to make a smoothie. You just need a blender. Berries always get bad really fast. So I would try to just buy frozen berries all the time. Unless every once in a while you want to like treat yourself to some blueberries or strawberries, or you're like me and like I feel like I just eat a whole thing of raspberries when I buy them. But if you're not going to do that, you're probably just going to throw them away. So I would try to only buy like frozen berries. You can even buy frozen greens, or you can freeze like your kale or your spinach. If it's getting bad, just throw it in a Ziploc or just buy it frozen already. And then trying to add in, a lot of times a good way to get vegetables in if you don't like the taste too, adding cauliflower rice to your smoothies can help make it creamy. So things that make smoothies creamy are like avocado, cauliflower, and you won't taste it. And the nice thing about cauliflower is like it's white, so you won't even notice it when you add it. It's not like it's going to make your smoothie like green or something, and some people get freaked out by that. So that's a way to do it. I also like buying, which you don't need to buy this. This is probably more of like a supplement kind of item, but like chia seeds and hemp seeds. I like adding seeds to my smoothies because with hemp seeds, it is a complete protein. So you're getting all of your amino acids, which usually you only get all 9 of your essential amino acids from animal products. So sometimes for people that don't eat a lot of meat or they're vegan or vegetarian, they want to find, it's important for them to find plant-based foods that are complete proteins. So that can be like hemp seeds, soy. So I add hemp seeds to my smoothies, and then chia seeds are also higher in protein, and they have omega-3 fatty acids, which are good for us. And 3 tablespoons of hemp seeds is like 10 grams of protein, which just is like crazy to me. And they're not going to hurt your stomach like chia seeds could, because chia seeds are really high in fiber.
Interesting. When it comes to the, like your question, Erin, of like, how can you kind of add more things in to eat more diverse foods? And Gabrielle, you can let me know if this gets the dietitian stamp of approval, but I listened to this audiobook and it was called Eat to Beat Depression and Anxiety. And it was all about like a lot of these foods and stuff that we're eating and their impact on our emotions and stuff. And so the book politely attacked me and humbled me severely. And I realized I'm really terrible at like nourishing my body. And I felt like it could be so overwhelming to go from having that realization and wanting to eat better to then like go in the grocery store and be like, oh my God, I don't even know what to get. So I'm starting this little challenge with myself that I'm calling One New Thing. And I'm going to share it on social media so that I keep myself accountable as well. But the goal is that every week at the grocery store, I pick out one new, like, nutrient dense thing. So this week I picked out sauerkraut, which apparently has a lot of good benefits for your gut bacteria. That's one of the things they listed in the book. And I think next week is going to be kale. So I know you'll give a stamp of approval on that since you love kale, but I've been so intimidated by kale, you got to massage it and it's all that. And I feel like if I don't do it right, then I could end up hating it and being like, I'm never having kale again. So, but it's like, eventually you have to try it, you know, or like at some point you want to just expand kind of what you're eating. And by taking it one thing at a time, I feel like it's helping me kind of not get stressed and overwhelmed, and also not break the bank, because it's just one thing each week. You know, it's not like I'm buying chia seeds and hemp seeds and kale and this, that, and the other thing. And then I'm like, oh my God, I just spent like $50 more than what I expected. It's just one thing, which is, you know, like 10 bucks or less, depending on what you're buying.
Is that a book you said?
It was like a book. Yeah, I listened to an audiobook. It's called Eat to Beat, Depression and Anxiety.
I love that idea. It's literally like feeding a new child. Like, there's something called 100 first foods, and you introduce one new food and you try to get it in their first like year of eating. You try to get them 100 new foods to try, because trying new food, you know, it gives you different nutrients. They're all different. They're all going to have different benefits for you, and you're going to react to them all differently. I think that's a really good idea. And I think it's also probably more cost effective, not only because you are only picking one food, but if we could take it like a step farther, you pick one food from like the perimeter of the grocery store. So one fresh food, like fruit and vegetable, or a new grain, instead of being like, oh, I'm going to try one new like type of cookie. Like, I like, you can, but like, you know what I mean? Right. Like, oh, a new packaged food, I'm going to try like something like that. Like, that's not as exciting. So I would try to do it with fresh fruits and vegetables, and maybe trying to, for like the packaged snacks that you love, try to stick to like one or two. Like for me, I really like Siete chips. So when I go to Whole Foods, I let myself get them, but I don't let myself go to Whole Foods very often, because they are like probably like $5 chips. Like, they're kind of ridiculous. But if you just let yourself do like one kind of food like that, it's probably going to be more cost effective than every time you go to the store, you're just buying a bunch of convenience items.
Yeah. The goal with the challenge is to do that, is to pick something that is like nutrient dense, not like some random, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to try the new flavor of Oreos.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And the thing that like I really like about it was that the challenge wasn't in the book. It was just something that I decided to do after reading the book, because he was saying, you know, all these different things are so good for you. And then I was like, oh, how the hell am I going to like get all of those things? You know what I mean? But what I also felt was, I was like, well, what happens if I do buy, you know, 10 different new things at the grocery store, and then I don't really like a lot of them? Now I have all this stuff just like, again, rotting in my fridge or going bad that I don't really like. So now it's like, okay, I bought sauerkraut this week, and if I love it, then I'll buy more sauerkraut when I run out. Or if I like buy kale next week and then I end up loving kale, then that now becomes a staple in my grocery shopping every week. And maybe something else comes off my list, because now I have something that's more nutrient dense to replace that initial thing. But I also think it could be helpful for people who maybe are like listening, people who maybe have kids and they want to introduce more nutrient dense foods into their lives, because I feel like children can get very overwhelmed when it comes to new things, especially like leafy greens and like, you know, like certain things that might look a little funky, like a dragon fruit, or, you know, like I feel like kids can be a bit intimidated. But I feel like it's a good way to kind of sneak things in. I also love your tip about putting cauliflower rice in your smoothies, because I'm allergic to gluten and dairy. So I feel like I'm limited sometimes in what I can eat. And I always am like, am I getting all of my nutrients just not having, you know, like no dairy products, nothing with wheat? Like, it is kind of limiting in a way. So I do look for ways to kind of add things in like that. And I feel like that's such a good hack, because a bag of cauliflower rice, like frozen cauliflower rice, is so cheap. And like, I mean, it makes your smoothies creamier. You said, like, who, like, why wouldn't you want a creamy smoothie? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a win-win, like the nutrients, and it's making your smoothie a lot better.
Yeah. I would say I have a couple things to say. With the gluten, you are missing out on important B vitamins. I'm not going to like, it's hard to say that every person should be taking like a multivitamin or a B complex, but a lot of women might benefit from it. It really just depends if you're on like different types of medications, but like for your instance, it could benefit you, or just getting B vitamins in other food groups, as well as calcium and vitamin D. So a lot of the nice thing about, I was going to say it's more cost effective, because it is, to like make your own plant-based milk. It really depends on how often you use it. I know like Aaron uses it. Do you still use it like every single day? So like it might not be as cost effective or however you want to look at it, but it can be fortified in vitamin D and calcium. So it is nice to have like the fortification, especially for someone that can't get dairy in. And the other thing with fermenting foods, so buying like kimchi, sauerkraut, it is good for your gut. It's filled with like probiotics and prebiotics. It's going to feed the good gut bacteria so you can produce more. But if you, those are so expensive, like a jar of kimchi or a jar of sauerkraut. One, if you want it to actually be fermented, you want to get it in the fridge, because if it's on the shelf, that means the bacteria, like it's live bacteria, is dead. So you want to keep it in the fridge. But you can easily make that at home too. And like, I'm not gonna, like, I've never done it, but it's just water and salt. And you can just cut up any vegetable and put it in a mason jar. And you can make your own fermented veggies if people want to go that route, because that would be pretty cheap versus buying like an $8 bottle of sauerkraut.
Yeah, I was shocked. I don't know why I decided to start with sauerkraut. I just felt like I love like pickled onions and pickles, yeah, and like anything like that. So I was like, I'm going to try like sauerkraut. I don't know. It was a very random item to start with, but I was shocked because it was like $7 for a jar and I got it from the like fridge section. I was like, that is so expensive. It seems crazy. But on the topic of supplements, I've talked about this a lot on my social media, but I saw a functional medicine doctor last year because I was having all these different reactions and everything, and none of my doctors could figure it out for 10 years. And that turns out I had a gluten allergy. And when she ran all the tests, she found that I was super, super deficient in vitamin B. I remember there was like a scale of some sort, and I don't remember what the exact numbers the scale was on, but it was like 0 to 100. And I was at like 4. Like I had like, it was so bad. She was like, swiftly, you need to like get some vitamin B, and like, we need to get this kind of, you know, figured out here. It was a lot, and also super deficient in vitamin D. So I now take both, you know, supplements for those things and try to think about what foods would have those so I can kind of, you know, supplement that. But I feel like a lot of people get really overwhelmed when it comes to supplements, especially with, I don't know if you two have been seeing this all over social media, but on TikTok, especially with TikTok Shop, I see so many videos of people being like, this supplement and this. And I'm like, it kind of drives me nuts. Like, it's so overwhelming. But I can see someone who wants to improve their health being like, do I take this? Like, how do I know if I need a probiotic? How do I know what supplement I need? So like, do you have any thoughts around that? Like, how do you know if a supplement is good or not? How do you know if you should be taking something or not?
Yeah. I see it all over TikTok, and I think it is driving me insane how many people are telling other people to take supplements when they don't know anything about their health at all. It's, if it works for you, I'm happy for you, but it's also like if they're selling it, like you're just making money off of it, and it's not necessarily going to help every single person. I think it's really hard. I think there's a fine line between like, oh, you can get all of your nutrients from food, just eat a healthy, balanced diet. And also the fact that like half of our guts are messed up and we might not even be absorbing the vitamins that we are consuming from food. So I think in some instances it can be really good for people to have a multivitamin. The example that I can think of right now, and it really just depends. Like, I think you shouldn't start any supplement until you talk to a dietitian or a doctor, just to throw that out there, because I need to look at someone's labs to tell you what you need. I need to like know what you're eating and how you're digesting your food so I can come up with, you know, a good supplement for you. The one thing that I've been looking a lot into is like hormonal birth control, for example. So I recently went off of hormonal birth control, and I wasn't really thinking about how it can deplete different vitamins and minerals. So like zinc, magnesium, selenium. And I realized that, you know, your liver is what's going to detox and eliminate all of like everything. So if your liver health isn't good, you're not properly detoxing. We detox through our liver, our kidney, our sweat. But if you don't have properly functioning liver, if you're going out and drinking alcohol all the time, you might need some extra help, but you might want to focus on your liver first before you start just taking a bunch of supplements, because your liver is going to be like taxed if you just keep taking supplements and you can't detox everything. So it's kind of complex. And I think it's really important for people to work with someone that understands the complexity of it, because just taking a supplement isn't necessarily going to fix everything. It might make you feel better. And if it does, that's great. But like for me, I went off the birth control pill. I knew that I was losing, you know, magnesium, and I'm taking magnesium now. I'm taking a really like robust multivitamin. And I was also, before I took my multivitamin, I was taking a B complex just because of the nutrients that I was losing. But yeah, a lot of medications, a lot of different diseases, and it's really hard to just say that everyone needs a supplement, because you might not. And it could be harmful.
That's like such a good point. I remember I was having this conversation with Gabrielle like a month ago, because I went to go see a PCP for the first time in pretty much my entire adult life. And I was texting her after the appointment and I was like, oh, I got my blood work done. Like they said it was good, but like, is it good? You know, it's like some doctors, like they look at some stuff, but yeah, not everything. And she was like, well, you can send me the labs and I can like take a look. Maybe it's like within normal range, but there's some things that aren't optimal, because I was telling my doctor, like I have some just like little things. I'm like pretty good overall, but like I get lightheaded in the gym or just different things like that. And she was like, well, let me take a look. So Gabrielle, when you work with someone, typically what does that process look like? Do they go get blood work done and you take a look at all of their charts and all of that stuff? Or kind of like how do you work with patients one-on-one, and like what are the outcomes versus the symptoms?
Yeah, so it's definitely a lot harder than in the hospital. I have access to all of their labs. What I do with my patients is a lot of times they will send me recent labs. But for instance, I'm working with a client right now who's honestly hasn't had lab work done in like 2 years. And she's also feeling some hormonal symptoms. So I do a couple like functional tests in my practice, like stool tests and hormone testing, but I still like to confirm it with doctor's labs too. So I sent her a whole list of labs to ask her doctor, and understanding, especially with hormones, that they might not test all of them, but we might as well try. And based on those labs, at least I have some more information on where we can go with things, and I can see what medications they're like taking every day, because there are like drug nutrient interactions. So you might not be able to take a certain vitamin or mineral if you're on a certain medication. One like interesting thing off of what you said with your labs is, for instance, after I went off birth control, you need to wait like about like 3 months to get your labs checked. So I got mine checked about 3 months later, and I just wanted to see everything that my doctor would do. And one of the things she tested was ferritin, which is part of an iron panel. And everything was, quote, normal. But I knew that for like hair growth, because my hair was shedding, I need my ferritin to be closer to like a 70, and I was in like a 50. So yeah, it's still within normal level, but there are some levels that might be more optimal. And then I went to a dermatologist and she confirmed that with me. So I always just like confirm it with other like providers, because I think that's like the best way we can learn too. And also looking and researching the information can help. But for my clients, yeah, we kind of just start. A lot of times I start with the gut. So a lot of people have gut issues, so I want to start with the gut before we fix said like hormones, for instance, because if you aren't absorbing your nutrients, that's like the first thing you want to fix. I also do like micronutrient panel testing. So you can get that done from your doctor, or there's a lot of different labs that you can do it with. And through that, you can see, you know, what you're deficient in. And that can also help gauge what kind of supplements might benefit you.
You talked a little bit about how like some of your labs, for example, were within like normal range, but they weren't necessarily optimal. And that was one of the things when I was working with a functional medicine doctor that I thought was particularly interesting, was she would say, because I said, I'm like, you know, I used to get labs at my regular doctor and they'd be like, yep, everything looks normal. And sometimes I couldn't even see those labs, which I found was so strange. Like they would just send me a note and be like, everything was normal. And I'd be like, okay, wait, but like, can I see them? Because like, it's mine. Like you just, it was my blood. You just, so, like, I feel like I should be able to see it. But it was interesting because my functional medicine doctor, when we worked together, she did a ton of extensive testing and she kind of said the same thing where she was like, it's, you have to look at it as like an individual patient. So like for you, you said like you needed that level to be higher for it to be optimal for you as an individual, but there could be other people out there who function totally fine with a lower level. So it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people in their traditional kind of medicine system, doctors are like, yeah, you look normal, everything's great. But then it's like, okay, wait, but like I'm having problems sleeping. Like maybe you get lightheaded at the gym or you're feeling like you have these different hormonal symptoms or gut health issues or things like that. And it's like, okay, well, these might be common, but they're not normal. And so even if my labs are coming back normal, that doesn't mean that I am necessarily okay. Like maybe I need to change something to be at an optimal performance.
Yeah. And I feel like doctors and honestly, dietitians, anyone in the healthcare field kind of gets a bad rep because people assume that we're like out to get them and we're like not trying to help them. And I just think every provider is different and some are more old school and some, especially doctors, like they have so much really intense things to think about. So if your labs, if your ferritin's 50, but it's optimal at 70, they're just like, we don't care. Like we're not worrying about it because there's a lot of other like things that we need to focus on. But that's why it's so important to find a provider that you feel like you can trust and you can explain all your symptoms to that isn't just going to be like, you're fine. And I feel like it's really hard for women in general because people like, there's always something wrong with us. We always think something's like wrong and we're just like, it's hard to advocate for yourself when people are like, you're fine, like you're fine. But no, just like keep saying it and you can figure it out if you just have to, you just have to do a little more research and find who can benefit you. But I do not think that TikTok is where you should do your research. I don't think it's helpful. And I think there's a lot of people that are putting titles on their names in their videos that have absolutely no clue what they're talking about. And it's so harmful. So find someone that has like credible, good reviews and also has like an education. Like they have a credential.
I was going to ask about that. So your title is registered dietitian. You are an RD. Can you explain the difference between that and someone who is a nutritionist?
Yeah. So I have, in order to become a dietitian, you have to go to an accredited school that has a whole accredited program. So it's government regulated, all the classes I have to take. So we take a lot of similar classes in the beginning, similar to like pre-med. So we're doing like chemistry, biology, organic chemistry, biochemistry, physiology, anatomy. We learn a lot about how our bodies work and function, as well as we learn a lot about like psychology too, and research and statistics. So I've learned how to read research articles, how to find the best research articles, and also how to, from my own personal experience too, but you know, just the psychological aspect of eating and enjoying food and feeling healthy. That's a huge part that I think a lot of people miss on. So basically you do all of these classes for, I have a whole video on it that I went into like my entire transcript because I was like, I need to explain this, but for 4 years, and then you have to get your master's and to get, you can do your internship and your master's at the same time, or you can do them separately. I did it with a coordinated program. Our internship is essentially like a residency. So I had to work at a hospital for a year while also doing my master classes. And then you have to, after the six or so years, you sit down for a board certified exam. And then in order to pass the exam, and then once you pass the exam, you have to apply for license in that state that you're going to be working in. So some states are a little more like flexible. There's a whole map of legislation that I have to look at. So if someone in a different state wants to work with me and I'm not licensed in it, I need to make sure that it's legal for me to work with them. So yeah, it's government regulated. And in order to maintain my license, I have to be providing like evidence-based nutrition information. I can't just be saying a bunch of BS. I mean, obviously every person has made mistakes and said something that might not be extremely accurate, but you have to, you know, correct it. And I have to do continuing education, and I have to submit continuing education every like 5 years, 2 to 5 years for different organizations to maintain my license. But it's like a whole thing. But like the nutritionist, there's nothing wrong with becoming a nutritionist. If you are really interested in nutrition and you've already done college and like that you just want to tack on some nutrition, like there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's awesome. But you can do a nutrition certification that can take a month. You could do some that take like 3 months, and it's just very basic nutrition knowledge. It'd probably be similar to like my first nutrition class where we just learn about very like important foundational things. So just like carbs, fats, proteins, how to calculate calories, things like that. But it is not like legal for anyone to be giving people, except for like doctors and dietitians, like meal plans to treat disease. So what we do is called medical nutrition therapy. So it is nutrition in order to treat or manage a disease state. So yeah, there's a lot that goes to it, but that's kind of the difference.
So interesting. I know that probably cleared it up for a lot of people because, I mean, with every industry, there's like a bunch of different titles and stuff. But especially when you're looking at like someone's social media account, it's just helpful to take into consideration like who they are, what they do, what they studied, and all of that. But we are almost out of time. So we wanted to ask you one final question, which kind of goes like on this topic too. But what is the craziest health or nutrition myth that you have seen on social media?
I don't know. Literally, I've made so many videos on it. I feel like each year it's something different. I would say this year was a lot of greens powders, and not to like bash on greens powders, but I think the whole year has been like a gut health year, which is fine. I think we should all focus on our gut health, but it's led to a lot of really random things. Like taking greens powders, or you shouldn't eat like broccoli or tomatoes. That's one of the biggest ones. The nothing against people that want to eat carnivore. If you want to eat a certain way, go for it. Just understand the nutrients you're going to be missing if you're eating that way. But people that are telling people that fiber and kale are bad for you, when that is just not true. And the studies that they're showing are just not even good studies. And you'd have to eat literally pounds and pounds of kale for like days at a time in order for it to like impact your like thyroid, for instance. Like, it's kind of crazy, the people that are really forcing anyone that's like shirtless in a grocery store. I would try to avoid listening to anyone that is telling you to eat one specific way because it maybe benefited them. I would also be a little eerie of, because that's not, there's not one way to do everything, and you are an individual person. So figure out what works for you, but I wouldn't try to encourage everyone to do it. Do whatever works for you and be happy with it. And don't try to tell everyone they need to do it, because it could be really harmful for someone.
That's kind of what I mean. Long story short, vegetables in many different forms and shapes and sizes are good for you. So.
Yes, all the colors of the rainbow.
I love that. Well, Gabrielle, thank you so much for coming onto the Girls Talk Money podcast. This episode was so fun. We hope you guys learned so much. Can you tell everyone where they can find you?
Yes. Yeah, so I am on Instagram and TikTok at dietitian.gabrielle. If you want to work with me, you can feel free to like DM me, or you can, there's a link in my bio where you can do a free discovery call, or I have, a lot of different products. I have a whole grocery shopping on a budget thing on my Stand store that you can look at. So meal planning and grocery shopping on a budget, as well as some grocery lists. And if you use code Gabe's Loves Aaron, you get 15% off. And
15% off of what?
Anything. Literally, literally anything. It's fine. If you're listening to this podcast and it doesn't work, just DM me and you can have it, because I think it'd be fun.
I love that. Yeah.
And I want people to learn. So there you go.
My own discount code, but
yeah.
We will also link all of your social media accounts and all of that into the show notes so that people can find you super easily. But thank you again for coming on to the Girls Talk Money podcast. And I hope everyone has an amazing week.